Father, thank you for this morning and for our time to gather to again look at some practical examples of applying your word. Help us to think through these things scripturally and in a way that that brings honor to your name. Pray these things in Christ's name, amen. Okay, so we're going through some practical examples, and I've got a few more for us to look at this morning. The first one I'm going to pass out is a handout. Sometimes, like, we're passing out handouts and going over that. Sometimes we're looking at actual videos on the screen. So we're going to start with a handout. I have a video we might get to, which would be probably the next or the one after the next. So let me get these passed out to everybody. My man Ethan's not here to help me out with this. There we go. Morning. So this example is, I actually saw it referenced in a news article. It made that much of a splash, but it's actually a Facebook post by somebody. I don't know who the person is, and don't really know anything about them, but the Facebook post tells a story of this lady's experience. She took I'll just let it speak for itself. Title is, "My Child Is Not Required to Share With Yours." As soon as we walked in the park, Carson, presumably her son, was approached by at least six boys all at once, demanding that he share his Transformer, Minecraft figure, and truck. He was visibly overwhelmed, and clutched into his chest as the boys reached for them, he looked at me. "You can tell them no, Carson," I said. "Just say no. You don't have to say anything else. You don't have to say anything else." Of course, as soon as he said no, the boys ran to tattle to me that he was not sharing. I said, "He doesn't have to share with you. He said no. If he wants to share, he will." Well, that got some dirty looks from the other parents. Here's the thing, though. If I, as an adult, walk into the park eating a sandwich, am I required to share my sandwich with strangers in the park? No. Would any well-mannered adult, a stranger, reach out to help themselves to my sandwich and get huffy if I pulled it away? No again. So really, while you're giving me dirty looks, presumably thinking my son and I are rude, whose manners are lacking here? The person reluctant to give his three toys away to six strangers? Or the six strangers demanding to be given something that doesn't belong to them, even when the owner is obviously uncomfortable? The goal is to teach our children how to function as adults. While I do know some adults who clearly never learn how to share as children, I know far more who don't know how to say no to people, or how to set boundaries, or how to practice self-care, myself included. In any case, I'll give you one more for the folks that just walked in. In any case, Carson only brought the toys to share with my friend's little girl, who we were meeting at the park. He only didn't want to share with the greedy boys because he was excited to surprise her with them. The next time your snowflake runs to you, upset that another child isn't sharing, please remember, we don't live in a world where it's conducive to give up everything you have to anyone just because they said so. And I'm not going to teach my kid that's the way it works. So there you go. This is the lady relating her experience, and she's given her opinion. Apparently this went viral on Facebook or whatever, and thus it ended up in the news, and thus I saw it, and thus I shared it with you. So now we get to kind of look at this and comment, and what do you think about what happened there, and what do you think about her expressed opinion about what happened? Martin.
One twist that's kind of interesting. I haven't thought about it, but this is just a twist on the old stupid thinking of an entitlement mentality.
Yeah.
I just find that interesting.
Yeah, we do live in a society that this is a very preeminent way of thinking about things, isn't it? You know, I just have a right to, what you have is mine, you know, and I you should, if you don't let me have it or share it or whatever, you're not willing to share. You're not a nice person.
And I would assume too that if it continues the way it is, now we're back into socialism 101.
Well, that's where a lot of folks would want to head, obviously. And this is just kind of, you know, showing where that's going.
Her example was great.
Yeah.
And that's so correct.
Yeah, it is. It really is. So we get into this kind of opens up the question, because in a way this is kind of a no-brainer, I think. Unless anybody would just take issue with it, I doubt they would, but you're welcome to if you want to. This opens up the idea of, you know, teaching your kids to share. What about that?
And there's different ways to share.
Right. And obviously this is a case where it seems pretty cut and dried. I would back this lady up to the hilt. He was actually wanting to share. That's why he brought the toys. He was looking forward to sharing with his friend. So it's not like he's, you know, even, you couldn't even accuse him of wanting to keep it all to himself, although, you know, nothing wrong with enjoying your stuff. I know with our kids, we emphasized the idea of ownership along with the idea of sharing. Sharing is something that a person voluntarily does out of the goodness of their heart. It's something that should be encouraged. It's something we want our kids to learn how to do. It's something we want to do ourselves as adults. But it must come from the heart. It's not, you give that toy to him, that's good, you're sharing. That's not sharing. That's just having somebody take your stuff away. and maybe there's a time for that, but you're not really teaching them to share. You have to own it before you can share it. You have to own it. It's like that passage in Acts chapter 5 with Ananias and Sapphira. You know, people were, it talked about in that passage somewhere that the Christians all share with one another, so it was as though, you know, they all, people get out of this a kind of a communal idea. But if you read the passage carefully, there's ownership there. And the sharing that went on was sharing of own possessions. Because Ananias and Sapphira had to share what they had. They owned it, and they were lying about what they shared. That's why they got in trouble. was for the lie, not for the lack of sharing. They could have just withheld and decided not to share it. I don't think they would have gotten in trouble for that. So you have to have ownership. And I want my kids to understand the idea of ownership. I think that's an important thing. It's something that the Scriptures talk about, ownership. And so any thoughts on that, or y'all like to kick in? I mean, I think you're all on board, but I'd, you know, certainly welcome to pitch in.
I have a little one that's gray to me, and I'm in a special situation where kids are coming to my house and they're not mine.
Yeah.
But they'll bring things that's theirs. And if they lay it down and are not playing with it, someone else comes along and plays with it, the one that owns it sees it, that's mine, and you
yeah.
can't give it to me.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've made the rule, if you bring it, you have to share it. Now, not if they're holding it and playing with it, they don't have to give it up.
Right.
But if they're not playing with it,
yeah,
then it's free game.
Well, yeah, and my wife tells me, you know, story. She's back in the nursery right now with the kids, and frequently that issue comes up with the kids that she has in there, you know. And, of course, none of those toys belong to any of the kids that are in there. They're sort of communal property, as it were. And she sort of goes by the, you know, first come, first serve kind of rule, which, you know, if a kid's playing with it, okay. But, you know, then they get into the kid play with it. He set it down and got interested in something else. Another kid say, oh, good, that's free. Hey, that I was playing with that. And so Sandy, you know, she'll step in and say, no, you know, you were playing with this now, so that he can have that or whatever. She kind of has to police that. And so first come, first serve comes to play. Communal property issues are always hard to resolve because the community owns it, and how do you, you know, who controls, and, you know, even in the adult world.
With community property, one way we found this really helps, especially with all the cousins being there. You know, you got 16 kids.
Yeah.
They're all wanting to play with the same thing. We set our phone timer. Okay, you get it for 2 minutes, next person, and they line up, and they pick a number. Okay,
yeah.
You're number five, you're number eight, and they know what order.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they know.
As long as they hear that timer, then they police themselves. Okay, your time's up. It goes to this person.
Yeah.
And they'll pass it around, and there's no fighting, no quabbling. And that way, it's everybody's getting the same exact amount of time, but you have to use patience and wait your turn.
Yeah.
And then, but if it's their property, well, yeah, same thing.
Yeah.
Yours, you don't have to share it if you don't want to. But if you're tired of people nagging you, go put it away.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good example you bring up there. And we had that many times. Like, it's just something there's only one of. Like, we had a trampoline. And we didn't want all the kids at once on the trampoline because they'd knock each other off. So, you know, go one at a time. But I went on. Okay, here's the timer, just like what you did. You know, and we had them set the timer. And, boy, you know, as soon as that thing went off, okay, get off. I'm getting off. It's my turn, you know. Or using the computer. We only had one computer back in the day. And, you know, everybody wanted to line up and get on the computer. And so, yeah. So, different ways to handle that. But I think the idea of ownership is an important idea, and we shouldn't drown that out with the idea of sharing. Yeah.
And we shouldn't let our kids want what we have, because that's the issue with bringing in certain toys.
Yeah.
Oh, look what I have, and
right.
You can't touch it because it's mine, and you don't have one.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so you're really going for biblical principles that you're trying to. These are all biblical principles we're getting at here. Not flaunting is one, sharing is one, ownership is one. You know, these are all principles, and even in our own lives, we have to counterbalance these principles because sometimes they come into conflict. Okay, which one prevails in this situation? We have to decide those things, and your kids have to learn how to decide that also.
To teach respect for the ownership aspect, to make it hit home a little bit more, we have a rule that if you're borrowing someone else's toy and you break it, accidentally or not, you are responsible for paying to have it fixed.
That's good. That's
so
good
that
point.
You treat that toy as if it was your own and you're respectful of it. You don't give it back broken, like, well, it was an accident, here you go. And
yeah.
You destroyed somebody's property.
Yeah.
So to teach them to respect other people's property and that ownership, you know, giving that more authority there, it comes out of your allowance and you have to go and you have to replace that toy.
Yeah.
So they think twice before they're wanting to borrow someone else's because they don't want to have to pay for it.
Sure.
If something happens to it. That's been a big deterrent I've seen through my nieces and nephews and even our kids, of them understanding you know, you pay to play.
Yeah.
That's what it is in life, too. You're going to have to pay for someone's car if you wreck it. You know? Learn to pay for someone's toy now.
Yeah. And we face the same thing as adults, too, don't we? I mean, you know, that's a dilemma I have sometimes, wanting to borrow something from somebody, or do I want to buy it or rent it? Or, you know, if you borrow it and it breaks, you know, and I just have a personal rule that if I borrow something from somebody, I always try to return it in at least as good as, preferably better condition than when I borrowed it. So if it was a little bit muddy when I borrowed it, I clean it up, you know, or something, just to say thank you. Yeah, those are, again, all biblical principles, and these are things we're wanting to teach our kids, so... Just like adults have to learn these things, the kids have to learn these things, and that we're trying to train them into becoming adults and hopefully Christians. So, all right. Well, let's let me pass out another one here. We did Ginger Plowman last week, and I wanted to do another one of hers. This is one that I think is extremely practical, but I want to see what you all think about it. I'm going to just to save time, I'm going to put a chunk of them down here. If you guys would just take them and pass them down. And you could have one per person. I got plenty of copies, especially for no more than are here this morning.
Sorry, these are mine.
Yeah. Hey, sure. Okay, let's set the timer. Let's set the timer on Stephen. Okay, so we're going to do like we did last time. We'll read and stop a little bit. Understanding the issues of the heart. Allow me to give one more example of how important it is to train children in righteousness and how you can walk them through the process. A while back, Wesley, that's her son, was going through a time when he was intentionally aggravating his sister. He would get down on all fours like a lion, snarling and growling and drooling as he charged after her. I don't know why in the world she wouldn't like that, but she didn't. And he would also come up with other, quote-unquote, games that were entertaining at her expense. I sounded like a broken record all day long. Wesley, stop! Wesley, quit! Wesley, Alex doesn't like that! He'd stop, but then he'd move on to something equally irritating. His verbal response to me was the same every time. Yes, ma'am, but I was just playing with her. It became a never-ending cycle, all day, every day. Wesley, stop. Yes, ma'am, but I was just playing with her. Wesley, quit. Yes, ma'am, but I was just playing with her. Wesley, she doesn't like that. Yes, ma'am, but I was just playing with her. The problem was that neither of us was looking at it as a heart issue. And the reason why the problem continued all day long and manifested itself in different forms is because the outward behavior was the only thing ever addressed. He would stop, he would obey and stop the particular behavior I told him to stop, but then he'd move on to a similar behavior. I saw the common denominator of each behavior, but he lacked the skill to evaluate what was in his heart. Therefore, he could not discern the wrong of what he was doing. I had failed to probe his heart. I had failed to draw out the sin that was causing him to constantly aggravate his sister. And I became frustrated with telling him over and over the answer to stop aggravating her. But that was the problem. I kept giving him the answer without teaching him why it was the answer. If he understood his own sinfulness and repented of it, he would be able to govern his own behavior rather than me always having to tell him to stop. Okay, now she's going to go on and tell how she changed gears, but before we take a peek at that, there's a situation that this is not uncommon. You got two kids, and one's always aggravating the other one. It keeps happening over and over, and he stops a particular thing, but then he thinks of something new. What's wrong with what's happening? What would you suggest as a solution before you look at what she offers as a solution? Let's see if we can think of something. Huh?
Spank him.
Okay. So what happens if, I mean, maybe you spank him, maybe he'll figure it out, right? You figure out why you got spanked.
If he told me I'm just playing, I would just say, no, you're not playing, you're bugging.
Yeah. 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 I kind of am inclined to think that her, you know, her assessment was he didn't understand, he doesn't know, and she's really giving him a big time benefit of the doubt, more than I think I would have. I would have kind of basically did that. Yeah, spank him, and you know what you're doing, acquit it.
Just obedience
too, because she told him how many times. Yeah. But she's wanting to take it a little bit further and try to, you know, reach the heart idea. And I agree with that idea of reaching the heart. Again, as I told you last time, we didn't, in my own personal practice, and that doesn't make it the right or wrong thing, I'm just being honest with you, I didn't tend to deal with things the way she's going to lay out here. I would have done just what I just said, you know, quit it. You know,
she's a little lacking herself if it took her that long to figure it out.
Yeah, she is. She is. Well, let's see what she says. Next page. Eventually, I realized I had to work backwards from the behavior to his heart. Each time he began to aggravate her, we would go through a very simple line of questioning. Mom, Wesley, judging from your laughter, you seem to be having a great time growling and chasing your sister. Are you having as much fun as you look like you're having? Wesley raises one eyebrow in curiosity. Yes, ma'am. Mom, is Alex having as much fun as you are? Wesley, squirming a little, well, no, ma'am. Mom, tell me, what is Alex doing? Wesley, pausing for a moment, looking down. She's screaming and crying. Mom, honey, are you delighting in Alex's suffering? Because love does not delight in evil, so she's bringing in a Bible verse. Wesley, with a look of understanding, followed by a look of sadness, Alex, will you forgive me for making you cry? I'm not going to tell you it never happened again, but there was a tremendous improvement. When it did happen, I would guide him in pulling out what was in his heart. And there have been many times when he began to aggravate her, and as soon as she became unhappy, he would apologize and stop the behavior on his own. He was able to draw from the understanding he gained by evaluating his own heart. It's a process. It is a process, but I'm seeing fruit from him learning his own heart. It's a process. But I'm seeing fruit from him learning how to govern his own behavior through understanding of his own heart. Now that I've reached his heart, my next goal was to show both of them how the conflict could have been handled biblically without being a tattletale. So we got a problem with the girl as well. I accomplished this goal through the use of role play. Okay, so we're going to move on to that, but let's think about that for a minute. What do you think about what she says as her solution? Yeah.
As a kid, I was the bully Wesley, and I would not have given up that easily. just to speak honestly, like my sister crying and screaming and yelling at me to stop, that's what I wanted.
Yeah.
I wanted to rile her up because I got joy out of that.
Yep.
And so, that's all I'll say.
And I would say the same thing. Yeah, go ahead.
Are you delighting in her suffering? So would you, do you think you would have been honest?
No, no, I would have lied and said, yeah. No.
No, ma'am.
Yeah. Oh, but
down.
So it's quite interesting that they, I don't know, I'm encouraged that they bring it to a hard issue and at least, at the very least, whether or not in his heart he's hardened by it or not, he's brought face to face with the, with the fact that, you know, love does not delight in evil, and at least he's being shown, if that is what your heart is delighting in, then you're not in the right place.
Yeah. So. Yeah, so I like the idea that that principle is communicated, like you're saying, you know. Now, if you do you do it the way she did it, or do you, you know, tell him at the time you know what you're doing, and later, you know, you explain maybe in more detail, maybe he doesn't fully understand, or he's not seeing the pattern, his thinking and behavior, because you haven't got to the heart. I like that she's getting to the heart.
And more than likely, I would have tried to adjust my behavior so that it was a little bit more veiled and I was being able to stretch it out a little longer before she cried, or
right.
Crying was quieter so it couldn't be heard, you know, something like that. But I know that sounds terrible, but I mean, that's...
Oh, I know. No, I believe me, I was the older brother. I did the same thing.
You see how much thinking and smarts goes into that? And we think kids, oh, they don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Very hard to be evil.
I remember there were four of us. I was the oldest. My sister was 2 years younger, and then we had a brother that was born 2 years after that. It was kind of spaced out about 2 years apart. And the brother that was 4 years younger than me, 2 years younger than my sister, when he was a baby, we were just so mean. Don't ask me why we did this, but we used to go in while he was laying in his crib and pinch him and make him scream and cry. And we just got a big kick out of that. And we did that for a really long time, and I was terrified the day that he learned to talk and tell on us. And it's like, oh man, it's the end of all of our fun, you know? Isn't that awful? But just like you, that is a true story, you know. And my sister was complicit in it. You know, we were both. Man, it was so fun to go and pick on this little kid. It wasn't bothering us at all. You know, why did we do that? Kids are mean sometimes. They really are. It just, that's in our heart. Now, I knew it was wrong, you know, but that was the farthest thing from my mind. Who cares?
Obviously, knowing your child comes into play here, too. Because for Jaden, like when him and Jesse are both on the trampoline, Jaden loves for Jesse to be on the trampoline, but we've had to talk numerous times about, be aware of if your brother's having fun with what you're doing,
yeah,
or not.
Yeah.
And stop. And so, you know, when, you know, if he starts crying and Jaden stops and lets him get up, you know, calm down, and then they play again,
yeah,
then that's okay. But I know for Jaden, the worst thing that can happen for him is for me to take Jesse off the trampoline and leave him out there by himself.
Like, yeah.
That's not what he wants.
Right.
And so, knowing what, you know,
what
more than anything, just saying, well, you had your chance. Brother kept crying.
Yeah. Yeah, that can be another way of...
There's also an interesting emphasis difference, because the first thing Jonathan jumped to, and kind of most of the people in the room, I think, would agree with, is that there's this issue with him disobeying his mom.
Yeah.
Like, that seems to be the primary issue, especially, you know, we've gone through this class and you've been teaching us, like,
yeah,
you've got to teach your own kids to obey.
Yep.
And she's addressing more of the horizontal child-to-child issue and wanting to dig into, why aren't you loving your sister?
Yeah.
And I just think of, you know, when we relate to God, you know, oftentimes our horizontal relationships aren't going to be right if our vertical relationship with God isn't right.
That's
so
true.
It seems like what she's getting at, and of course we are about to get to what she does next, but what she gets at first is, well, why aren't you loving your sister? And maybe it would have been helpful for her to start with, okay, you need to learn to obey me. You need to be loving me.
Yeah.
Honoring me in that way. And then a third angle that I grew up with, at least my parents tended to emphasize how the other child can deal with it, which I'm not saying that this is the right way to do it. It probably wasn't, but I used to irritate Jonathan by like running and taking his toy and running off. And my parents, or my dad, I think, would tell Jonathan, just don't react to him and he'll stop doing that.
Uh-huh.
So finally he would just not cry or anything, and I'd come back and throw the toy and, you know, run off and do something else. Which is kind of teaching the kid how to be shrewd in the world and difficult people.
Yeah.
Not really addressing me and the fact that I was intentionally irritating my brother.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's another thing you get into. Sometimes, and in fact, I think it comes out in this situation as we progress through this a little bit, is that there can be issues on both sides because, yeah, the girl, she's reacting, but partly she's reacting in hopes, in a sort of a tattletale sort of way, hoping to get him in trouble. And she's not hurting near as bad as she's making out that she's hurting, you know. And so this is like a way. And, you know, my wife dealt with this with Jason and Josh when they were little constantly. Because Josh was just a little reactor, and Jason was an antagonizer. You know, he was the older brother, and he would antagonize, and Josh, Wah! You know, and it was just really huge overreaction. Like, come on, we saw what happened. It wasn't that bad, you know. But then again, Jason should have been doing it, you know. And so you sometimes you end up with two guilty parties. But you're right about the vertical angle too. I mean, and he's pulling the classic "Don't eat the daisies" defense. It was a book when I was a kid. It says, "Please don't eat the daisies." And I think the gist of what the title was framed after in the story was that the mom had some guests coming over, and she put some daisies in the middle of the table as to decorate. And the kid started eating the daisies, of all things. And it messed up her flower display. And she's like, "What are you doing? Why'd you do that?" And he said, "Well, you didn't tell me not to eat the daisies." You know, it's like you can always come up with, "Well, you didn't tell me." So what, you're going to have to think of every possible thing that kid might do, you know, or it gets out there and cuts up the garden hose with a razor blade. Well, you didn't tell me not to cut the garden hose with a razor blade. No, but, you know, I'd never let the kids get away with that. I mean, if I honestly thought they didn't know, maybe, but something like that, mm-mm. And even then, if you didn't know, you better know next time because you'll learn. This doesn't pay. Doesn't pay. So, the don't eat the daisies defense just doesn't fly. Yeah, you shouldn't let it fly as a parent. Well, she's going to get into something here that I thought was kind of interesting, so let's read on a little bit further here. She talked about the importance of role-playing. This is something she feels is helpful. Role-playing is an extremely effective tool in training children how to put what they've learned into practice. When they put the knowledge gained into practice, it actually becomes part of their lives. The training will stick better because they learn how to use it in a hands-on situation. It is similar to the fact that learning all the book knowledge for a particular field of employment is of much value, but actually learning how to put that knowledge into practice can only be obtained through on-the-job training. Let me demonstrate how I used role-playing in the scenario that I just gave you. Although Alex started off as the victim in the situation, she was sinful in how she responded. As she was being chased down the hall by the ferocious lion, she cried and led the lion right to Mama's feet. Her voice was amplified as if it was the other end of the house rather than right in front of her. "Wesley's being mean to me!" And she had become what the Bible calls a talebearer, or we like to say a tattletale, and it seemed to me she would very much like to see her brother in serious trouble. Here again is where you can teach them how to apply Matthew 18. Once again, I simply use questions to probe her heart. "Alex, honey, have you asked your brother in private to stop chasing you?" With a pitiful face and quivering lips, she answered, "No, ma'am." "Would you rejoice in seeing your brother get in trouble?" She looked as if she were considering that question and leaning toward the yes end of it. I reminded her that God says, "He who is glad at calamity will not go unpunished," Proverbs 17:5. My next step was to walk them through how to replace wrong behavior with right behavior through the use of role-playing. Rather than just telling her what she should have done and leaving it at that, I took it a step further and had her put the verbal training into practice. I had them both go back to where the lion first began the attack, and I put the words in Alex's mouth. I said, "Alex, tell Wesley, please don't chase me and growl at me." Now, Wesley, you say, "Okay, Alex, that's it. It's that simple." By having them go back and do it the right way, I was training them in righteousness rather than just rebuking them for wrong. I'm giving them a means of escape. I'm teaching them to put off corrupt and deceitful desires and to put on the righteousness and holiness of God. Dear parent, I encourage you to pull out what is in the heart of your child, work through how your child can replace what is wrong with what is right, and then have your child put what he's learned into practice. That is how you train them in righteousness. Remember, this is a process. Mine will take off with the training 1 week and do great with it, and then out of nowhere act as though they had no training at all, usually when we're out in public. The days that our children really struggle, we become weary from training over and over again. We can be encouraged with the Galatians 6:9, let us not become weary in doing good, but at the proper time we'll reap a harvest if we do not give up. So, what do you think about her idea of having them role play things?
All of this makes me tired.
Yeah. Do you think it's not a good idea, or?
It's just a big, long, drawn-out scenario when you could just snip it in the bud.
Yeah.
We've actually been dealing with this quite a bit this week.
Oh, really?
The older the kids get, the worse it gets. I have two who are just tattletaling every time they open their mouths. It's like, are you telling on somebody? Well, yes. Okay. So I finally I told them that they're old enough to understand their consequences. If you continue to pester someone and they tell you, stop, please stop, I don't like that, they've given you fair warning. They have my complete permission to deal with you if you continue, and it's going to hurt. So,
what does that look like?
I said. So what happened is Adam's the instigator. And
okay.
Picking on Eli.
All right.
And Eli just finally kicked him.
Oh, okay.
Kicked him good. So Adam comes tattling, trying to get Eli in trouble for kicking, but after, of course, learned something from this, it was like, okay, so what were you doing?
Yeah.
Why did he kick you? Were you doing something to him? And then it comes out that he had been poking him or pinching on him or something, and Eli comes in and get his side and said, I told him to stop, and he would not stop. So then, Adam, so you're saying you got kicked because you would not stop harassing somebody else. You were pinching and, poking on him, and he told you to stop, and you didn't. Yes? Well, then you deserved it. Go away. You can cry all you want. I have no sympathy for you. I warned you that be conscious of your own actions. If you do something that you know is causing harm or bothering someone else, and they ask you, and all the kids know this, they have to ask for that person to stop first. They can't just haul off and sock them one.
Uh-huh.
But if that person refuses to listen and to stop, you have my permission to deal with it. And you put them in their place. Because they need to learn that as they grow up, they're going to be bigger people out there in bigger situations, that choose carefully where you want to start poking the hornet's nest, because there's going to be consequences to it. And you better be willing to take those consequences. And now they're learning that instead of tattling to me, they might get, whacked once from the sibling that they're pestering, but I don't hear the crying and the whining about it. They're kind of like, okay, they suck it up and they go on. I'm like, thank you. And I don't have to hear the tattling. So they're learning to deal with it amongst themselves. And I'm hoping that they're learning to talk it out and to listen to each other to stop doing it. But if not, they know that there's consequences behind it, and it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
Hopefully no broken bones or anything. But to the point where they were emptying the dishwasher and flinging the knives at each other because, they were upset about something.
Yeah. Well, of course, it sounds like, when you first brought that up, I was thinking, how's that going to work? But it turns out that it's the stronger one who's being pestered. If it's the reverse, that may not work as well.
The
little guy goes to hit the...
That's what I'm saying, old enough. They can hold their own.
Goes to hit the big... Yeah, so if it's the reverse, I don't know if you're going to be able to have that solution work the same way. Maybe. I don't know.
He might be big, but he's wimpy when it comes to getting punched.
Okay. I just know, in this situation that we're reading about, I don't... I suppose a girl could haul off and hit him. Of course, the other thing, do you worry that giving that advice could end up going in the wrong direction if it's progressed,
That's the thing. It's kind of like a catch-22 in a way.
It gets you out of the middle of it.
Having to learn to resolve their own issues. But I think I waited until, with the older ones, especially Eli and Adam. They're the two who they pick on each other the most.
Isaac gets in on the fray, but he doesn't quite catch on as fast as, and he'll get tired of it and walk away. Not a big deal. Hannah is almost there, but she's more the drama queen. She doesn't even get to that point. Hers is you look at her wrong or whatever, and she's
yeah.
She'll start screaming and crying for no reason. But the two boys, they know. They're old enough. They know how. I've seen them evidence self-control and how they're doing things, and then trying to teach them to problem solve together. Use your words first.
Yeah.
But if you refuse to listen, you have to know that there's some punishments happening. Whether I dish it out or it's going to be your brother who's going to tell you to stop. And maybe just from personal experience, that was the only thing that I remember growing up when I was a teenager. My brother was the most horrible instigator and would tease and tease and tease and talk. You just want to explode because it would be so bad. And my mom, I don't know, she would try to get him to stop, but she didn't follow through with it as much. Yeah. It took my sister turning around and giving him a bloody nose one time when he was about 14 or 15 because he kept instigating. She's trying to practice piano for a recital, and he's sitting there plinking on the keys. Just irritating.
Yeah.
And Joy is the most peaceful person in the world, and she kept telling, Dan, stop, Dan, stop, Dan, stop, stop. And then all of a sudden, she just lost it. And boom, socked him and just connected right with his nose, blood. I thought, I was laughing. I was so happy. I was reveling in that.
Yeah.
But he treated her like the queen. Oh, anything she wanted, he just, anything for her. He loved her to death after that point. Never teased her, never picked on her. It's like she stood up to him and he realized that he could not get along. He couldn't get away with it.
Yeah.
And I wish I could have punched him, but it's just, you know, the difference is of learning that when the kids learn to deal with the problems themselves instead of the parents jumping in, there comes a point in time you have to know each child individually of when they're ready for that responsibility to stand up for themselves and not to always keep going to mom. Mom's going to take care of it. Mom's going to spank you. But that they have to learn they're responsible.
Yeah. Anybody else have thoughts along those lines? An interesting dilemma, interesting suggestion on the way to deal with it. I could see it, you know, you gave the classic example where, you know, it really worked well. I could also see that going bad at some point, you know, teaching them to take the law in their own hands kind of thing. I don't know.
Well, we were told that if we started a fight, my mom was getting in there and she was finishing.
Yeah. Because I think we normally try to to get them to come report, you know, warn them first and then report. And in that case, they were in the clear because they had done their part. And then, you know, but that brings us back into the loop, too. So, and then I think about how, you know, my dad told me, not with my siblings, but in school, if a kid was bullying me, he said, just punch him right in the nose. He said, he'll never bully you again. And he said, even if you lose the fight, if you punch him hard enough in the nose and his nose bleeds, he will never bother you again. You'll become best friends. And he was actually right. I said, I was too big of a wimp to do it. I could pick on my little brother and sister, but I didn't like picking on bullies. Yes.
All right. So we've already talked about how I treated my sister. I was a classic middle child brain damage syndrome. And so, yes, I picked on my little sister because I enjoyed annoying her. But I picked on my older brother because he wouldn't give me the time of day and I wanted attention. And so it's like I pick on him long enough and then all of a sudden he would finally lose it and just start punching me.
Yeah.
And so in my mind, in the middle of getting punched in the arm so many times as my arm is starting to hurt, it's like, he's playing with me. It's having fun. I'll leave that one at that and I'll tell one more real quick. So I made my brother so mad that he finally pushed me up against the wall and I turned around in anger and just lunged at him. And I can still see it clear to this day. He just stared at me while I was coming at him, and he just held up a fist, and I ran face first right into his fist. And I still didn't learn a lesson from it.
So. Oh, my. We're learning some interesting things, aren't we? Yes, Martin.
I'm not so sure, but what that isn't the first time I've heard a parent entertaining the thinking of letting kids work out their issues. Now, one thing I'm sure of, although she didn't mention it, she's still aware of everything going on.
Right.
And she watches. She listens.
Yeah.
She won't let it get out of hand. And, you know, I kind of like the idea. I have to think about it a little bit more. But I do kind of like that. anyway.
You've got the Martin seal of approval, so I mean, hey.
We've had conversations about this, about how to deal with siblings, because from my perspective, it's that when we have a middle child, we're going to have to rein that in. And I'm scared about all the children being like me as a child. I'm terrified about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, when in our talking about it, she said, you know, I'm kind of the idea that they need to learn to work out their own issues. Now, you know, if you start breaking skin or breaking bones, you know, including noses and cartilage and stuff, then there's something you have to address there. Don't let it get out of hand. You're still aware of the situation.
Right.
Everything going on, but for the most part, they need to learn how to get along and work it out amongst themselves.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, because otherwise you become the go-to person. So constantly they just wear you out, and it is a great idea to teach them to work it out on their own.
Still trying to encourage them as they're learning this process of use your words, and how long is your patience and endurance? And if you don't like it, if you still, because it's teaching them self-control for them physically, like they're not just looking for an excuse to hit their sibling, but they're trying to get out of the situation. And how do you diffuse, you know, a bully type situation? You try to use your words, and you try to, eliminate the tension in the moment, or walk away and leave. And if that person still pesters you, then it's like going through fail safes and teaching them how to recognize those. And I don't know, to me, I guess maybe it's free range parenting, allowing them to experience trial and errors, and that they learn from their own mistakes faster than me going and telling them. Like she was doing it, she's always telling him what the mistake was instead of him discovering it for himself. So this is just kind of like a little bit bigger of a picture. They have to discover their mistakes themselves, more or less. And sometimes it stinks. You know, getting in your arm or a kick in the rump, it's not fun. But if the pain is more and they don't like it, you end up seeing those two who are fighting like crazy and picking at each other. They're off playing. I mean, there's no hurt feelings. There's no animosity. Yeah. They love each other, and they're having to learn to get along even with those they don't like playing with.
What do y'all think about the idea of the role playing that she brings up in here? I mean, and maybe not. Again, I wouldn't have done it in the situation, because to me that becomes kind of a way to get around the parental authority vertical issue, like Stephen was talking about. But that was something I would have wanted to have done in our family time when it's not an issue. And maybe have some role plays. You know, how should we treat one another? And I'd even be careful with that, because I remember one time I was started taking the kids through the Book of Proverbs. I think it was the first time I actually started a family time. And one of the pastors we were under said, you know, you may have a hard time thinking about how to take your family through something spiritual. He said, any one of you guys here could read through the Book of Proverbs out loud with your family, and you would think of applications right away. How hard is that? And I thought, yeah, I could do that. So I sat down to do that, and I started thinking right away of ways that, you know, Roger and Gina had, you know, violated those commands. I started really picking on them, and I ended up knowing what them mad at, but my wife got mad at me because she felt like I was being too, you know, in your face with it and making it kind of a I'm going to get you kind of thing. And so of course I had a very mature response. I just said, fine, we're not having any family time, that's why this doesn't work, you know. Of course we eventually came back and and we tried again later, and I avoided being that direct. So there is, you got to watch that, I think. At least I had to. But at the same time, you want to make it somewhat pointed, you know. There's a balance to be had there, too. So what do y'all think as far as that kind of a thing?
Yeah, it's been really helpful with Zoe. Now we don't have, obviously, Noah's not old enough that we're doing, like, here's how you treat your sister, and here's how you treat you. But it's really helpful for
the day's coming, though.
Things like teaching her, like what we talked about last week, you know, appealing.
Yeah.
Teaching her how to appeal in a respectful way.
Yeah.
Yes, Daddy, but have you, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Or how to ask for something or get attention when Mommy and Daddy are having a conversation. You know, teaching her to walk up and just put her hand on one of us quietly and waiting for us to acknowledge her. So that kind of stuff has been really helpful.
Well, good.
I also, a lot of those similar examples have really worked well, but we also have role played a little bit, going to play with friends, knowing some of the complications that can come up, and practicing, like, when he does this to you, what are we supposed to, you know, and kind of not having the other side to role play with, but talking through and
Well, you can play the other side, you know. Yeah. Try them out. So, okay, I'm going to be the other person. You know, you say, you know, and then I say, and, you know, just play it out. It can be a useful teaching device. Even for adults, we can act it out. We should do that sometime. Maybe have a set up at the front here, and I can be the kid, and you can be the adult.
I was going to say, how often as adults do we not play scenarios in our head about, okay, I have to approach that person about something, and how could this possibly go down? How am I going to approach that specific personality and that specific person concerning this?
Yeah.
And then, because we want it to work the best way. And so I think in a way that this is helpful is that, you know, you are teaching them to, rather than a way of, well, yeah, you say this is how it's done, but I don't know how to actually approach that person concerning that.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, show them how it's done so that they can at least have done it in a controlled situation, and it'll help with their memory the next time they have to do it. At the very least, they'll be able to do something similar or the exact same,
yeah,
to be able to put into practice an expression of what they're trying to do and try to say, to get across.
And yeah.
It's a very rudimentary and fundamental way of doing it from which I think they can grow and expand, rather than just perhaps not doing it, and it's like, well, good luck figuring it out.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the same thing, like, after disciplining, because you take care of the disciplinary issue first, and then afterwards, talking,
yeah,
like,
going
down, that getting to the heart issue is where I would think, after the main thing has been taken care of,
yeah,
then we start talking about the heart issue, and I think the role play kind of falls in line without even realizing you're role playing. But it's, okay, let's back up. Now, how would we have avoided this,
yeah,
spanking? What,
yes,
did you need to do?
Right.
What did you need to say or,
yeah,
or not do? It just having them admit, like before they get their spanking, they have to admit what they did wrong, why they're getting a spanking.
Yep.
And then after the spanking occurs, then it's, how could we have avoided having to come back here and get this discipline? And then making them go back in their minds and, well, I should have done this. I should have listened at this. I should not have, you know, thrown the knife at brother. Just different steps.
Yeah.
And then they remember that.
Yeah.
You know, and it also calms them down. And it calms me down, so I know I'm not so angry at them or anything.
Right.
I talk to them and show them, explain them the seriousness, different scenarios, like with Adam. If you're holding the knife, waving it, if you tripped, you know, what would happen with the knife? If, you know, you're stabbing somebody with it. Things like that, that they just, and hit, even on his little face, he's clueless. It would cut him.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
But yes, the role playing in that.
Yeah. And I think that's what I was getting at when I said what we did. I would deal with the discipline first, and then we would do a lot of the talking later. Maybe not immediately later, maybe later. But it seems to me like a discipline, that was my natural inclination. You need to meet out the discipline, settle the justice issues first, and then, you know, work, sort through. Otherwise, it becomes sort of a way of putting off the discipline, and it becomes a game. And boy, they'll learn how to play that one real quick. So that's why I don't think I ever went there. I think it was the right thing to do. I just couldn't see doing it another way. If somebody can make some other way work, I'm not opposed to it, but I just never could figure out how to make any other way work.
You could just see their faces if you said, okay, everybody sit on the couch. We're going to do a little role play.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right.
Okay, Hannah, you antagonize.
Like Andre said, it makes you tired.
Yes.
Yeah, thinking about doing all that. Yeah. Yeah, you can overanalyze these things sometimes. Folks, again, we're just out of time. We're going to do this one more week. I said four at the max, and here we're going to the max. That's okay. I've got a couple. Next week, we'll try to get into, we've been dealing with younger kids, and that's what most of you have, but someday your kids will be older. Some are already on the cusp of that. So we're going to do some older kid things next week. That's what I hope to do. And because that's a little different ball game. I mean, some of the principles are the same, but little different ballgame. So look forward to that. Father, just thank you for this time, and pray that this would be profitable. It's not always easy for us to sort out the details of what we need to do. There's a lot of wisdom involved in this, and we want to be faithful, and we know that the commands of Scripture are clear in terms of the broad principles, but help us as we work this down into the details, because that's where it has to happen. And it's only by wisdom, it's only by your Spirit that we would be able to do these things, and we pray for that ability. In Christ's name we pray, amen. You're dismissed.